Anyone concerned that the Kansas City area lacks a vision statement when it comes to the arts can stop worrying. Arts KC, the arts advocacy organization, last month laid out a 5-county, 2-state plan that leaders hope will fill that gap by providing a shared vision for coordinated cultural development of the region. I should point out that this is the first ever 5-county, 2-state regional culture plan in the entire country. We're going to talk about exactly what that plan is and how it will be funded. With us this morning, Harlan Brownlee. He's the president and CEO of Arts KC. Harlan, welcome back. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Alan Gray is also here. He chaired the One Arts KC Steering Committee and serves on the Lee Summit City Council. Alan, nice to have you.
Thanks, Steve.
Emily Bierman's also here. She's general manager of the Performing Arts Series at Johnson County Community College. Emily, welcome to you, too.
Hi, Steve.
Well, Ellen, what's the state of the arts in the Kansas City Metro right now? Are we really enjoying the renaissance that so many people say we are?
Well, I'm proud to say we actually are.
Yeah.
We are witnessing, I think, growth in the arts. We're witnessing participation in the arts. We're seeing families, communities, and even, yes, elected officials get on the bandwagon behind the arts. I just returned from Chicago and was very proud to be able to share with the individuals there what we're doing, and we're right alongside cities and communities that are looking at the arts and not just for the aesthetic of the arts, but how arts can contribute to the growth of communities.
Harlan, if we're on such a roll, why embark on such a huge effort to come up with a regional cultural plan? What was the point?
Well, the point was we were looking at the actual investment that had been infrastructure-wise for the community over the last 10 to 15 years. And as you know, we've really seen this cultural renaissance occurring in Kansas City. When we started looking at the data, we saw that the amount of investment was $1.57 billion, and really significant investment. So the question that got asked was, well, what do you do to make the most of that? How do you leverage that? What's the best way to keep that sustainable? And we got asked that question. We said, well, we better start looking and seeing what are other communities doing. So as we looked at best practices, we saw that those communities are planning and are being very deliberate in the way they think about arts and culture in their community. And that got us started thinking about, well, what was the vision that we wanted to have for Kansas City? This is really an issue of legacy. You know, just the other day, a couple days ago, my second granddaughter was born. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm looking at her yesterday and I'm thinking to myself, how do we make sure that the amazing art scene that I'm enjoying now, my children will enjoy and my children's children will enjoy? How do we do that? What's the way that happens? And we believe that is through a very deliberate planning process that we've embarked on, that's the way we get that done.
Emily Bierman, again, with Johnson County Community College. How does this change your world to have this plan outlined and in place right now?
Well, I think it really helps us plan our program, which, you know, obviously we engage in our own planning processes as the college and as the Performing Arts Series kind of on an ongoing basis. But we're very plugged in as a Performing Arts Series to what's happening across the city. And, you know, again, we've benefited from the growth in the art scene across Kansas City over the past certainly 5 years, if not longer. So I think this kind of plan makes it a little more official. It makes us feel that we're part of a much larger process. And that in turn kind of helps people in our community feel a part of things and feel that they have a role to play and a voice in the process.
You know, Ellen, this plan talks about the need for more arts education. We'll talk about that in a little bit. It envisions a world in which the arts are more fully, you know, embedded in daily life. It talks about the need for more public arts spaces. What's surprising in this report? Because many of the findings come across as fairly predictable.
Well, I think what's surprising is the unity and the consistency of the message. We as an arts agency quite often want to say that this is what the community wants, and it's a good position to be in on one hand, but on the other hand there's a level of uncertainty. Well, this plan has brought together and removed a lot of the uncertainty. Consistency in planning is important for organizations, is important for the funding community. But it also is a way for us to know that from the bottom up, the communities will support certain projects. The communities are saying what is actually important to them and how they want to shape their communities. The unique thing about this plan is that it's not a one-size-fits-all. This plan really is designed so that each community, we're working with five counties here, and five counties that have different cultures, different ways of doing things, different ways, different needs. Mm-hmm. And so this plan has the flexibility for those citizens, those taxpayers in those communities to reach out and communicate what is important, how they want to have art and culture interact in their lives, how they want to grow their communities.
We're talking about building the arts in Kansas City. Harlan Brownlee, how surprised were you that arts education emerged, if you will, as the priority of priorities?
Well, I wasn't terribly surprised by that, but I did recognize that there is a tremendous energy and force that's there now, and a mm-hmm. tremendous concern from the community about, again, back to sustainability. I think a lot of people are looking at these amazing facilities that we have and asking the question, how do we continue to build audiences? And how do we continue to have artists to fill those spaces? So you can have all those great spaces, but if you're not actually introducing young people to the arts, you don't really have a way to continue that. It's mm-hmm. really, it's absolutely essential. So there's that piece of building, just building audiences in general. And I think that's a concern going forward as we look maybe 10, 20 years out. How do we keep that going again, introducing young people? But the other part that I was fascinated with is also the concern that we saw around arts education from employers. Because lots of employers, you know, they need people to be able to read, to write, to be able to do math. But they also are looking at what we're calling 21st century skill sets. Mm-hmm. So how do I help a young person become more creative, more collaborative, encourage their creative thinking, become more communicative? Those kinds of skills are really built through the arts. And if you think about it for a moment, imagine that you have a kindergartner. You don't even know what the future will hold for them in terms of what will be the future jobscape. How mm-hmm. do you prepare that young person for a world yet that we can't quite even imagine? So, you know, when I was a kid, there were no cell phones and, you know, the whole internet was not even thought about. So how do you prepare folks for that? Well, one of the ways you do that is by giving them lots of arts experiences, because you are developing those skills of creativity, of critical thinking, of collaboration. Those are fine skill sets, and lots of employers are asking for that. So I was surprised by that aspect, mm-hmm. that more and more business leaders are recognizing the value of arts education to build those kinds of skills.
You know, Emily Bierman, as we talk about arts education, what are we talking about? Harlan just said introducing arts to kindergartners, first graders, and who in the world is going to pay for this?
Well, that's an interesting question. From my perspective as a presenter of the performing yeah. arts, I think the audience development piece is really important because, again, what Harlan said, 25 years from now, I mean, our series is celebrating a 25th anniversary this coming season. So 25 years down the road, are we going to have an audience? And if we don't, introduce kids to the arts now, you know, do you know any 19-year-olds that wake up in the morning and say, gosh, I think I'm going to go to the ballet today? Mm-hmm. If they've never been exposed to that, that's not likely to happen.
But Harlan, as you know, people have been talking about the need for arts education for years, and the question becomes, who will pay for it?
Well, I think that one of the things that we recognize is that you have to be able to articulate the need and then go find the way to fund that. Mm-hmm. What I think is unique about this particular plan is just how much of the need that we saw. And what you're seeing is that on some level, the community is expressing something that is very much in opposition to maybe some of the public policy that's going on.
Hey, have schools gotten away from arts education?
Well,
we have arts teachers in elementary schools all around the metro these days.
Interestingly enough, we did a survey to look at that. We didn't see a lot of decrease over the past 3 years. Now, we didn't look past that three-year period of time. But the public perception is that the arts are losing ground to other high-stakes testing. That's at least the perception that mm-hmm. we see. And when we ask the question, how much time do students get in the arts, we think there's a reduction of that time. So
you think that the reality is that there are fewer teachers and there's less time being devoted to the arts?
As an overall trend, we think that that's what has happened. Now, mm-hmm. how much of that has happened in the last few years is debatable, but certainly if you go back another 5 or 10 years, especially with No Child Left Behind, and you begin to look at the fact that schools have put resources into the areas that are tested, you begin to see some diminishing. But it's not just arts either. Mm-hmm. I mean, you also will see that in terms of how much time kids have in terms of recess, physical education, foreign language, and other types of studies, geography, for example. So this desire around high-stakes testing has changed the landscape to some degree.
Yeah. Hey, Alan Gray, tick off. We're talking about arts education being maybe one of the top priorities. What are two or three other priorities that come out of this report?
Well, we have arts education, marketing, and also creating what they call creative placemaking.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, that's where we take the arts and allow the arts to, in an organic fashion, develop communities. That might be going into a neighborhood and assessing how the arts can enhance the aesthetics again of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It might be individual programming in the communities. There's a variety of ways that we can look at creative placemaking. I think Johnson County they have recently in Nicole.
Nicole Emanuel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nicole Emanuel has a very exciting project there that will transform downtown Overland Park, where they will have galleries, they'll have performance space, and then reaches out beyond just the building into the community and invites the community in for arts experiences, mm-hmm. and engages the community.
And Emily, there's some talk in here about marketing and sort of making a central clearinghouse for information where arts goers can go to get information about what performances are on a given night, right? Which might really help what you do at Johnson County Community College.
Well, that's absolutely right. As a member of the steering committee for the Regional Cultural Plan, I was engaged in several conversations with community members.
Yeah.
And that's what we heard over and over again was, I know what's going on in my neighborhood, but I don't know what's going on in other parts of the metro. Or maybe I just know about the things I follow, but what about the other things happening in mm-hmm. my community? So absolutely, as a presenter, I'm always looking for ways to get the word out about all the things we have going on. And by the same token, I want to know what's happening in the arts community all over the city, because that represents places for me to go to collaborate and partner with other organizations and maybe create, you know, something that's larger together than all the sum of its parts would be.
You know, I'm a newspaper reader, obviously, and I'm always amazed at how many times I come across a review about a concert that was held in town a few days before that I missed. I wasn't aware that certain artists was going to be in town, and I'm always like, how did I miss that, you know?
And I hate it when people say that.
I bet you do. Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, we, like other groups, spend a significant amount of money trying to get the word out. And when we hear people say, well, do you advertise at all? That's a killer for us, because yes, we do. But we need to do it in the right places, and we need those opportunities to make it as global as possible.
Emily's bringing in some really absolutely amazing artists to her program.
Yes, she is.
And unless maybe you're receiving the direct mail ping piece, you may not even be aware of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, another good example of that is if you look up at Park University in Platte County. You know, Park is actually has a program with Stanislav that is training world-class, musicians, pianists, who will be performing all over the world. But I was in a room the other day, and I was making a short presentation on the regional plan. I asked how many people were aware of this program in Park University. Not one hand went up. And so that's a real gem. That's a real jewel. So finding ways to help people understand some of these amazing amenities that we have in Kansas City, we think of the world-class ones, which are great and they're important. But there's also a lot of grassroots and some really fine work that's going on that people aren't aware of.
Let's do this, ladies and gentlemen. Let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll talk about how this report affects districts like the Crossroads, 18th and Vine. And maybe we'll talk about the elephant in the room, too, which is some talk in town about the need for a second bi-state cultural tax for the arts. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our look at how to find happiness in your career or the debate between city council candidates for the 2nd District at-large seat in Kansas City. You can find those. Just go to kcur.org. Tomorrow, from the Asian bush honeysuckle to the Siberian elm, Kansas City is home to many non-native species. We'll find out why some are invasive and some aren't. Well, this hour we're talking about how to build the arts in Kansas City. We're talking about a new report from Arts KC that lays out a vision document, if you will, maybe the first one in the region to lay out priorities for the years to come. I'm joined here at the table by a host of good folks: Harlan Brownlee, president and CEO of Arts KC; Alan Gray, he chaired the One Arts KC steering committee; and Emily Bierman, she's general manager of the performing arts series at Johnson County Community College. You know, what does this report say, Harlan, about making the Crossroads an even more vibrant arts hub, or how to bring more people down to 18th and Vine, which is one of the great places in the world as far as your host is concerned here?
Well, it has really to do with the discussion that you had earlier about this idea of creative placemaking. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the challenges that a lot of cities face is, how do they differentiate themselves from other places? And one of the things we see is this idea, what we call America Generica, which is you can kind of go to any community. They all look the same. They all have Burger Kings and McDonald's and all
I
the rest,
that.
Right?
Yeah.
So what do you do in a community to differentiate yourself? Because that's actually one of the ways that you can attract people to your community. It's one of the ways that you can encourage tourism. You can magnetize a neighborhood, bring people together. Well, one of the ways you do that is through the arts. So I see this plan as simply only strengthening that idea, that as we look at where are there other places that we can continue to think about creative placemaking. We think about the Crossroads as one of the probably the first and foremost. We think about 18th and Vine, you know, but there are other places in there around the community, and there are other and other counties that are recognizing the that as a tool to help them with their development. Really good example is up in Gladstone. If you take a look at what's happening in Gladstone, they built that community center, and then just across the way now they have a outdoor amphitheater. They're looking at expanding to multiple use types of facility.
Mm-hmm.
They have really seen the arts as a way to bring more development to their community. It's also going out in Lee's Summit as well, and Alan's been a part of that.
Right. We did a cultural plan back in 2007, and I have to admit that our community had to be educated on what a cultural plan was, although there was a baseline of interest in the arts. So we went from 2007, very low on the awareness meter, to passing a bond issue, actually, in mm-hmm. 2013 that allowed us to expand our amphitheater to create a downtown historic museum and also downtown art space.
And people wanted to get that done.
Right. And I like to tell the story, and I'm not going to say names, but one of my council members, when we were discussing this, said that his idea of art and culture was what color flip-flops he was going to wear to the swimming pool. So we went from that to to where we
really?
Are. Really? Yeah. That's a true story.
How did you respond to that, Alan? Yeah.
Well, I asked him what size flip-flops he needed.
There you go. You mentioned this is a regional plan, 5 counties, what, Jackson, Platt, Clay, Johnson, and Wyandotte, right?
Correct.
Is that what
Correct.
We're talking? And Ellen, you also talk in this report about the great lengths you all went to include a lot of people in this process to come up with a plan. What exactly did you do to get this thing going?
Well, first of all, we're very appreciative to the elected officials that embraced this concept. But we took a little different approach. We asked each county to give us leadership along a broad cross-section of individuals. These weren't, as we say, the usual suspects, but these were also individuals that were very engaged, very knowledgeable of community needs, and very involved in their counties, educators, artists, individuals from the Parks Department, a real litany.
Emily Bierman.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And individuals that understood the arts from the ground up, understood how important they were, but also individuals that gave us honest, important feedback, honest criticism of what this plan should be and what it could be,
mm-hmm.
Those individuals helped shape this vision, and so we end up with a steering committee of 25 very engaged individuals, many of whom are going forward to help with the implementation component of it.
If our listeners want to chime in here on what the arts community in Kansas City needs, your recommendations, we'd like to hear them. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Or you can also tweet us at KCUR up to date. Michael sent us this observation on the state of the arts in the Kansas City metro. Working a long time in the Kansas City community performing arts, I can say that there is an extreme lack of affordable administrative and rehearsal space. Many organizations are in church basements and closets. It's hard to grow without proper affordable space. Harlan?
Well, he's absolutely right. I mean, there's a lot of smaller arts organizations that are struggling at times. And one of the things that we looked at in this particular plan was, are there ways that we could help build the capacity of different arts organizations across the community?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that has to do with how do we see the ability for these different organizations to collaborate and work together?
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that I see is that many artistic organizations have a particular vision of what they want to accomplish. And sometimes in that pursuit of one's vision, it maybe will isolate you to some degree. So I think when we can, and I think this is one of the things that Arts KC can help facilitate, and we do on some level, is how to bring together these different arts organizations, these different visions, and look for ways to leverage the resources so that people are sharing different mm-hmm. spaces, they're sharing different resources that are coming along. There have been some examples of that I think that have happened, and they've done a fairly good job, but there's a lot more that can be done there. And I think a lot of it has to do with just being able to have people be present and understanding that this is a possibility, that we can come together and think about how can we collaborate more effectively.
Emily, what's your sense of how big a problem that is? And you were talking earlier about this need for collaboration between groups, and this is exactly, I guess, what Harlan's talking about.
Well, that's true. I know in our venue, we often rent our space to community groups and artists around the city so that, and we've tried to take
the theater at Johnson County Community College.
Yes. So mm-hmm. the Polsky Theater is one of our spaces, and it's a 420 seat space. It's very intimate. We've done shows there with Heart of America Shakespeare Festival, Owen Cox Dance Group, Ensemble Iberica, Bo Bledsoe's Ensemble, the Bach Aria Soloists. And we've taken a look at how we do that. So instead of just giving them a flat rate, we try to do revenue sharing. So if they're selling tickets, we might get a portion of that. But it is to make those spaces available to artists because they consistently have to move around to find them.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that we like to do is work with groups like Nicole Emanuel's group, Inner Urban Art House, to kind of provide programming that we can share. So maybe we do some of it there, some of it at our place, introduce different parts of the community to what's happening in each of our venues, and that's helpful as well.
You know, space, administrative staff, those are issues. The other one you hear so much about is money. So let's move to the elephant in the room, Alan, at least as I see it. I mean, what about the subject and the topic of a bi-state cultural tax? I mean, a decade ago, voters said a resounding no to this idea. Is this plan sort of a precursor for another run at a bi-state cultural tax?
No. Yeah. No. The purpose of this plan was to give the region a vision for how the arts can be applied, how the arts can grow in a community. Yes, there is a need and will always be a need to look at how do we fund projects, how do we sustain the arts. But in no way is this a backdoor plan to go toward a bi-state. That said, we recognize that in order to do these great things, there will be a need for funding. There will be a need for resources, and as part of our implementation phase, we are bringing together individuals to help us look at that. Each community, as Harlan said, will have a different set of needs, which will require a different funding model. We do expect that in each community there will be a variety of public-private partnerships. There will be engagement by individuals. I just looked at a plan earlier today and said that individual giving is one of the best ways of funding communities.
But Harlan, other cities do it. This city has talked about it and talked about it for years. Has the time come?
Yeah. Well, you know what I would say to you is that we don't want to put the cart before the horse. So what we felt was absolutely essential is that we understand what are the articulated needs of the community. when you look at the plan, you'll see that there are a number of actually different options that are put in there around potential funding mechanisms. Yes, the bi-state is mentioned, but I will tell you, we had a long discussion about this. What we thought was, and as we listened to people, this idea of the bi-state came up over and over. So we knew that it would be disingenuous of us not to include it in the document because people were asking about it. Now, I think we have to ask the question, are people ready for that? If they aren't, if they are, they are.
What do you think?
What do I think? Mm-hmm. I think at this point in time, the community is not quite there. Yeah, I think that there is...
I'm not sure I buy that.
No?
Nope. I sense a hunger out there.
From the arts community or from the general community at large?
From the general community at large. I think that maybe the page is turned. That's just my sense. Mm-hmm. Just talking off the top of my head. Alan?
Well, I think that there's a lot to what you're saying there, Steve. The difference between the environment when the original bi-state was presented and the environment
because you got hooked
now,
up with a stadium tax with the stadium renovations. Yeah,
there was involvement on a lot of different platforms, but there was no real plan. It was a singular identity or a singular project. This goes way beyond that. This shows how if it is supported by a tax, it shows how each community that is involved can use funds to move their needs forward, to have something and have programming that's going to impact on their children and impact upon their individual lives beyond just a single entity.
Emily, what's your sense of Johnson County and its interest, its willingness in exploring this idea of a bi-state cultural tax?
Well, it kind of depends on if you're talking about Johnson County government or if you're talking about Johnson County citizens, because I think it might have divergence as we've seen with the arts education piece. So people in the community, I think, maybe are more ready than people in government might be ready to move ahead with a tax of some sort.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we're talking about a 5-county area of over 1.5 million people. If we all gave $5 a year, this thing would be done. We'd be putting it to bed. We'd be implementing everything and more. So it really doesn't take a lot, but it does take an investment by all of the counties that are involved in the plan to make things go.
If our listeners want to respond to all this, 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Monica from Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome to Up to Date.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to reiterate and commend the people for trying to come up with a central clearinghouse for all the things happening every day that maybe you could just click into, see what's happening, and that would be very helpful. And I would suggest that when you get that you communicate with the large corporations in town and have them add that link to their little home pages that people can check on, because we have new people moving in all the time working for us, and they don't know where to go, what to see, what's happening. So anyway, that's my suggestion.
Monica, thank you, and that's what you were talking about before.
Yes, Monica, great idea.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me that the city's arts renaissance, I guess you could say it's moving in two directions. It's from the top down, and I'm thinking about the Nelson Atkins, Harlan, the ballet, the opera, the symphony, and the rep. And it's from the bottom up, you know, through street artists, students, small gallery and theater owners. Who's winning and who's losing right now as the arts evolve?
I love your questions. I have to tell you, I think they're actually both winning.
Losers.
I mean, and I don't say that there's, I don't think they're both winning. What I'm watching, what I'm seeing, and from my seat, and I lived in Kansas City for 31 years, and I've watched this change so much. I see the top organizations, what we often refer to as the world class. They're all doing very well. Their attendances are up. They are creating more visibility. Kansas City is being seen as a cultural mecca in many ways. When you actually look, one of the things that we track is how many artists are coming to Kansas City. Are we losing artists? Are we gaining artists? We're gaining about 125 artists a year
of all kinds.
All
you're
kinds,
saying.
Yeah. Independent artists are coming to Kansas City.
How do you track something
so
like that?
We look through the IRS data to see how they classify themselves with their income.
You're getting about 125 a year.
About 125 a year, so we're growing, and I also hear.
How does that compare to other Midwestern cities?
I'm not sure, but I do know that that's a positive thing for us. And then when I watch some of the smaller arts organizations, and I see them growing as well. Now, their struggles are different. But nevertheless, I see them getting more visibility. And I also know that the people who are coming to Kansas City, the new individuals who are, as Monica said, who are moving to Kansas City, many of those individuals are looking for arts experiences, but they want all kinds of different experiences. Mm-hmm. They don't want just the ballet or the symphony or that. Those are great. People want those things, but they're also looking for those more grassroots experiences.
So people are interested in more variety today than they were
Absolutely.
A few years
ago. Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we're seeing with millennials is that they want to have a wider variety of different offerings. They want to be able to experience the arts in a lot of different ways.
Don't you just love them?
I do.
That's just amazing. That's just amazing.
So I really do believe that it's kind of a win-win for everybody. But, of course, we're always looking – everybody's looking for those resources to help through their work.
I'll take an example of our Lee Summit. We have a Lee Summit Symphony that's been around for now 11 years. We have – the symphony has performed in a high school auditorium for those 11 years. Last year, to celebrate their 10th anniversary, they had the celebration at the Kauffman Performing Arts Center. Sold out a performance
there. Really?
And now this has become an annual event. So we have a small symphony that is using a world-class facility and then can go back and then recruit other artists, other musicians to that symphony, and so to be to come from a community of almost 100,000 to perform on a world class stage, that's quite an experience, and that's transforming, and that's the impact.
The Kauffman Performing Arts Center Harlan changed the dynamics in this community?
Oh, it was a lightning rod for us. I mean, truly a lightning rod in terms of bringing attention from the national as well as the international community. But what's really fascinating about that is that while it provided that lightning rod, we had everything else already set up. We had that grassroots piece going on already. So what it did basically was it just simply highlighted the wide variety of things that were already going on in the mm-hmm. community. And it actually was an important lesson because one of the things that we looked at was what happened when the Nelson did their expansion. I don't think many of us realized just how profound that was. So when we saw that the Kauffman was coming online, many of us in the community said, this is a once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-generation opportunity. Yeah. Let's make the absolute most of it.
You know, I mentioned in the at the outset here that we're talking about the first ever 5-county, 2-state regional cultural plan in the country. You know, given that we're talking about 2 states and 5 counties, how tricky is it to meet one of the goals here, which is this notion, again, of improved public access to information about the region's cultural offerings through coordinated marketing? We've talked a little bit about that, but what's the challenge there, Harlan?
Actually, of all the things that are in there in terms of the counties working together, I actually think that's the one that's probably going to be the easiest on some level. And the reason I say that is because each county has something to gain from being a part of that. So
it's a win. It's a win-win.
It's a win-win for them, right, to work on this and to bring those resources together.
All right. I want to thank you all for coming in today. Harlan Brownlee, President and CEO of Arts KC. Alan Gray, he chaired the One Arts KC Steering Committee. Emily Bierman, General Manager of the Performing Arts Series at Johnson County Community College. Great conversation. Good luck with your work. I'll be eager to see what happens next.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.